Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. How are you, Ruth?
I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, really well. I'm looking quite shiny though in this video.
You were a little bit.
I went for a run and I think I had a shower before coming on and I put some moisturizer on and I think it's perhaps I was a bit overboard with it. It's a
You're
healthy glow.
glowing. I just
Glowing.
moisturized my dry elbow. I have
Oh, nice.
an elbow that gets really dry and it just needs a bit of moisturizer. I'm glad everyone tuned into the podcast to hear about this. It is actually something I am a little bit sensitive about because when I had a bad back, I used to always lean on this elbow and it developed like a kind of hard callus.
Callus. Yeah. I call it Planker's elbow.
Is it a thing?
No, I just call it Planker's elbow because anyone
Oh.
that's been plank for a long time, you know. And
Yeah.
it sounds a bit diff like, you know,
Yeah.
sounds a bit like something else.
Anyway, moving on from my elbow, do we have any excellent questions from the Commit Six group?
We of course do. We do. I will start off with this one. It says not so much a question as a talking point. I'm about halfway to a healthy BMI, lots of fat loss, still a long way to go, and I think I'm more performance goal motivated now than fat loss, and I'm just not as laser focused. There's no bucket, just veering more towards maintenance calories than fat loss. I'm not 30 HD as I'm data driven and feel more in control that way. I'm sure I'm not alone. Any words of wisdom, please?
So I don't think it's bad to be performance driven, but performance driven can include fat loss. And if you're not in a healthy BMI range, now, just to caveat this, obviously there are problems with BMI, but let's say BMI plus a bit of common sense, right? Like if you're storing excess body fat, losing that will improve performance. And I actually think that's a much healthier way to look at it and a much more positive way to look at it. Like, oh, I want to get better at running. Okay, well, will it be easier to run if you're carrying less excess weight? Yes, 100%, right? There is a reason most good runners are relatively lean, right? And same with like, oh, if I want to get better at pull-ups, do you know what's going to make you get better at pull-ups? Not having to pull up like excess body fat, right? So even if you're thinking of it from a performance standpoint, I think that might actually be a healthier way to think about fat loss. Now, I don't know exactly what you mean. It sounds like there's kind of two things here. Like being performance driven, I think is a great thing. But then it's like, okay, well, you're getting a little bit lax with your goal of fat loss. I would try and stop separating those in your head, like they are one and the same from where you're at. And actually, having a performance-driven goal is quite good because it stops you losing too much fat or dieting too extremely. Because if you're like, right, I still want to maintain performance, you still have to fuel yourself, right? And there will come a point where like more fat loss will not improve performance anymore. And that kind of stops you before you end up going too far. Like, if you, I mean, right now it's not a consideration, but if you're always quite performance driven, okay, like I want to feel my best, I want to perform my best in the gym or for running or whatever the performance metric is, then it's actually a pretty good way to think about it.
And sometimes when you're looking to perform better and your energy expended or your activity increases because you're feeling like you can do more, you might, this is something we covered recently on the podcast where people were thinking that they are eating maintenance, but they're not because suddenly their energy expenditure has changed. And maybe the food choices that they're now eating because they're eating for performance maybe aren't as high calorie and so on, and they end up losing weight without even realizing as well. But yeah.
Yeah, I think with a lot of these things as well, like try not to worry so much about the specific fat loss goal and think about, okay, what actions do I need to take to feel my best? And at the moment, feeling your best is going to require a little bit of fat loss, right? So, what actions do I need to take? What do my meals need to look like? What does my day set up need to be? Rather than always looking at the outcome, like look at what you need to do this week to get you closer to there. And even honestly, no matter what your goal is, really, because it's only the numbers that are going to change. If you think, how do I prepare my week this week so that I can feel my best in every aspect of my life? Like, how do I show up at my best in all aspects of what's important to me, right? Like, look at your values, look at how you want to live your week, and then make a plan to action it. And will it be perfect? No. But will you stay within your range targets? Yes, that's the whole point in it. All right.
Perfect. Next, okay, front loaded versus back loaded squats. What is the difference and which is better for body composition and strength? Thanks.
Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, they are two different exercises. As essentially body comp wise, I mean, I like a front squat because if you've got some form problems, it can force you into keeping a bit more upright, engaging the I find if I'm doing front squats, I end up engaging my glutes a little bit more because I can't lean forward and take that away. So how you're doing it will change. But essentially, if you're squatting, in theory, you should be doing it in the same way. It's just that if you're squatting, you could be more likely to squat with bad form, I think, in a back squat, in the sense that you could lean forward and take a bit of the emphasis off certain areas than in a front squat. But if you're not able to front squat well, then you can end up not being able to lift very heavy at all because you end up trying to lift it mainly with your arms. So there's pros and cons to both. But yeah,
Yeah, I
definitely.
agree. I think most people, I mean, even if you're very good at front squats, most people can load a back squat heavier than a front squat, right? So if you're thinking, right, okay, what do I want to get to, like, maximal load through these muscles and maximal stimulation, probably a back squat. But then with front squats, like Ruth is saying, you're kind of forced into very good technique. But some people don't have, like, even the upper body flexibility to hold the bar in the right position. So it is slightly harder. But it would be a good thing to practice, even with like a broom, you know, like anything, just to get your lifting technique better. Yeah, so a bit of
I
both. I
mean,
mean, I wish Claire was here. She's really the expert.
yeah, I used to struggle a bit with front squats, and I find that with front squats rather than back squats, I do put my feet on some plates. So I just raise my heels just a little bit to just keep my back up a bit. And I will, if I'm better now, I can hold the bar more in that kind of, I can have I guess my shoulder flexibility or is better. I can bring my shoulders back and up and get my wrists down to hold the bar on the front. But I used to use lifting straps around the front so that I could hold them. So, you know, adapt and learn. But it's really good for practicing form anyway. I definitely found it helpful.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes with exercise selection as well, like you can overthink it a little bit and forget about what your goal is, right? So if you're like, oh, I really want to compete in CrossFit and I want to get good at cleans and I really care about my form and like my full depth of squat, cool. Like do some front squats, get good at this, like practice it. If you're like, oh, you know, I just want to get in shape, I want to feel a bit better about myself, I want to work my leg muscles, you could probably just do leg press. You know, like you don't, your body doesn't, like your quads don't know if you're doing a squat or a leg press. And if you're like me, like that has a really high injury risk for me. I still get quite a lot of pain when I do, honestly, even very light squats. But in a leg press, that doesn't happen. So I'm like, okay, well, this is what I can do. And my goal isn't to compete in CrossFit. It isn't to compete in powerlifting. I don't need to actually squat to depth. There's actually no need for me to do that, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I agree actually. I mean, I don't love going super like maximal strength. Occasionally it will be something I'll have a go at, but because I don't need to, I avoid it as much as possible, going very low rep. Like I don't really want to do one rep maxes at the moment.
I
Just
even mean depth of a squat.
oh right, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And some people are like, oh, that's not a full squat. It's like, well, I'm not in a powerlifting competition. I don't care.
Aim for 90 degrees, but actually saying that, even then, if you're not, you do what you can because a half squat's gonna be fine if the other option is no squat.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. Well, there we go. It's one from you next, Emma. It says this week's question. So when you feel meh and find it difficult to get out of feel difficult to get out of it, what do you do to help yourself? What's in your toolbox? I could have done with this question the other day. The PMT feeling, you know, where you're just like really trying to have a conversation with yourself and like you need to do all those things, but it's really hard when you are feeling in that moment. I think take myself away from anyone else for a moment is a good idea. Go for a walk.
It is really hard, and like the hardest bit is getting that momentum going and doing something when you don't feel like it, right? You wake up, you've got cramps, you're hormonal, everything feels like it's going wrong. I noticed that for me, it's more, I spoke about this on the AFM podcast the other week, actually, because I was talking about like resilience during that week. Now, if you run a business, and Ruth will know this well, something will go wrong every day, at least one thing, if not like numerous things will go wrong every day. Now, most of the time I'm like, okay, cool, yeah, I'll fix that. Or like, yeah, no problem. Or, oh, that's, I can't figure out why that's gone wrong. Like, let's figure it out, right? For those 3 or 4 days before my period, the smallest thing can go wrong. And I'm like, no, this isn't like, no, this is it. Like, I can't do it anymore. I absolutely, like, this is like the last straw, right? I just have way less resilience. Like, my mindset's very different in terms of normally I'm like, okay, cool, we'll figure it out. I find that really hard during those couple of days. So that's a big difference. I can't really remember what my point was here. Oh yeah. And when you're feeling in that, you get up and you're in that mood, and you know that getting out for a walk is going to be the best thing you can do, or going to the gym is going to be the best thing you can do, or eating a healthy breakfast, but you really don't want to do it. I normally tell myself that those are the days that count. Like, it isn't, most people think like, oh, I've had the best week ever. Everything's gone perfectly well. Nothing's come up at work. All my, kids have gone to everything perfectly. No one's been ill, nothing. Everything's just been smooth. I've managed to get in all my gym sessions. People think it's those weeks that get them results. It's not. It's how you manage your bad weeks, because they're inevitably going to come, right? And maybe it's PMS week, or maybe it's just like stuff goes wrong, or you're having a hard time at work, or arguing with your partner, or something. I think when you can reframe it as these are the weeks that matter, like that gym session you don't want to do, even if you do half of it, that's the gym session that matters, right? That's the one you can be proud of yourself for, and that's the one that's actually getting you results. And that's how I frame it. I'm like, the days that I don't want to do it, those are the days that matter most, because most of the time I do want to do it, and that's great. Crack on. But it's the days where you really don't that is kind of more motivating, because you're like, right, well, these are the days that count, and these are the days that most people would give up, right? And then when you think back to our whole like fuck average mantra, like most people won't go on those days. Most people will end up overeating. Most people will think, oh, just like let myself fall in the fuck it bucket, nothing I could have done about it. But like, if you don't want to be most people, if you don't want average results, and you don't, because the average person is overweight, unhealthy, bad relationship, doesn't enjoy their job, like the average stats in the UK are pretty poor. If you don't want to be like that, then you can't behave like the average person. That's what I always remind myself of. That's what I was kind of like pep talk myself into. I'm like, cool, you said you wanted these results, so that means doing it on the days you don't want to do it. But if you don't want to be average, then that's what you need to do.
Yeah, I find that that you don't like when you've got PMT, you don't like people necessarily telling you that you're acting like you've got PMT. So my strategy now is to just say, I don't want you to comment about this, but just so you know, I'm really struggling today. So if you wouldn't mind just giving me a bit of leeway and being really honest about it, but being like, I don't want any you don't I don't even want you to reply to what I'm saying now. Thank you. I'm just telling you while I can that this is okay. But it's building habits makes it hard. But I've got such a routine around working out now that it happens easily when I'm feeling good or bad. I still turn up. And I'm like when I was struggling last week, I had a phone call come in the middle of a session and I had some messages coming through. And I should have just not looked at my phone, but I did. And then my head was on other things, but I still went through the motions and did it. And yes, I didn't come away feeling as good as I normally would because I didn't do those things that I'd normally do, like just pop it down and get on with what I was doing. But yeah, the routine is there, the habits are there. It really helps.
I think that's a really good rule to have, is like you'll still show up with no expectation. Okay, might not be as good a session. You might not do it all. You might be a bit distracted. You might decide, not to go as heavy, or not to do that last set, or whatever. But your rule is you turn up. And I think that, like, just that will have such a big impact.
Yeah. And it is like you said, it's those times that matter most. And actually, I've had to reframe, because I will find myself saying, oh, I have to do a workout today, or I've got to do a workout. And actually, I don't have to. Nobody's holding me down and making me. I want to do a workout. So I'm really trying to change what I say, even when I'm feeling bad, just changing that messaging. It's like, I want to do a workout today, or I'm choosing to do that workout. And even those little things, just saying to yourself, the reframing of it in that way helps as well, I think.
I think that's such a good point. I know we speak about it all the time, but it is as simple as like, I'm doing this because I want the outcome. And like you said, no one's forcing you to. You don't have to do it. But if you want the outcome, like, yeah, this is what's required to get that outcome. But you're choosing that outcome and you should feel good about that. It's an empowered choice. But yeah, you split the work.
I saw an Instagram reel. It was like one saying, a marathon, it was like a guy finishing a marathon. He was like, a marathon is just a celebration of the months of training. And I was like, that's it for everything. You know, a successful business is the hard work behind the scenes. Reaching your fat loss goal, if that's it, is the work that you've put in prior to that. Everything, the outcome is the celebration of that work you've put in. And the times that we're fearful of the outcome is often when we know we haven't done the work that's needed to put it in.
Yeah, my athletics coach used to always say medals are won in the off season. And it's so true. It's like we trained way harder in the winter. Like the summer sessions aren't really that hard because it's like speed work, right? Long recoveries. You want to stay fresh. You want to stay sharp. You're not, your training volume goes down quite a lot and it's just the quality that stays high. But in the winter, it's like volume, 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 like really, really like horrible. You're pushing yourself really hard. And that, like, but that's when you win, right? Like that's the work, that's like the messy work that has to be put in so that in the summer that you can just rock up and be like, great, just effortlessly, you know, like it's meant to look effortless. I love that saying as well, that it's like when anything looks effortless, it's because it's like years of hard work behind it. You know, when you see a sprinter run, you're like, it that just looks like beautiful, like effortless that they're running at that speed. It looks just impossible. Or you see like, you know, not even a sprinter, but like Mo Farah running marathon. You're like, what the heck? Like that would be more than my max out sprinting. And you're just kind of like I don't know, just looks so effortless. Why? Because it took so much hard work to make it look that effortless. And normally that's true for anyone. Like, not to make this about me, but people are often like, you make pull-ups look so easy. I'm like, why do you think they look easy? You know, because I do them every single day, right? You know, like I practice them. It takes a lot of practice to make anything look easy.
Well, that's what when we were talking about HYROX a little while back, and I said my goal next time is to not necessarily do it quicker, but finish it better. But it wasn't that I was thinking about the actual event itself. It's more about the training, finding it so that those exercises that I've put in the hard work that I need to, and focus on it a little bit more. So you can go in, A, feeling more confident about your ability to do it because you know you've done the hard work, and B, hopefully not dread each exercise when you get to it, which I didn't really anyway, but it's just, I thought it's just nice to go in with that feeling like the training's gone really well. I'm really happy about this, but I don't know if that's what she asked. Oh, she sort of did, period. Well, PMP,
She
you're what?
started talking about a period, and then we were like, yeah, medals are won in the off season. Okay. I'm glad that's so useful for your PMS symptoms.
I mean, she didn't even say PMS, but she just said when you're feeling a bit meh, which I took as PMS.
Oh yeah. I actually think so this was a one-to-one client. I'm not even sure it was related to PMS. But anyway, it kind of relates to, you know, anytime you're feeling.
But at the same time, when you're feeling meh, all of those things are
Yeah.
like reframing your mindset there. But yeah, okay, sorry about that. The next one I've answered, it was somebody asking quite a specific question about their calories, so I'm going to skip past it because it's done. Okay, if you're doing 3 times full body workouts per week with the rest day in between each, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but you can't make it one day, is it still better to do three even if you can't have a rest day in between, e.g. Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, or is it better just to do two?
Yeah, you'll be fine Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah.
I'd have to adapt often if I've got, if I'm traveling or something.
How dare you have a line?
I know, right? There you go. I'm a member of a gym, and on Mondays I like to do an early strength session and a lunchtime class, which is more cardio training with a bit of strength thrown in. It's the only day of the week I do a double whammy. I've just walked to and from my gym and still not hit my low end of steps, so just under 7,000. How important is it for me to maintain my step count on days when I've gone hard on the workouts? Thanks. I already know what you're going to say.
Do you?
Well, I feel like you're going to talk about cardio, the fact she's done cardio, but you go.
Yeah, I mean, cardio counts for sure in terms of energy expenditure. I'm not gonna lie, I still do. Not that I often do like double sessions, but like I'm still like, you know, if my non-negotiable is 8,000 steps, which for me it is, I'll still do it. And it's not
I
that,
mean,
you know, if you're like, oh, I've got 7,000, it's like, just do it.
I think
Just
she
do it.
probably.
Box like
I think she probably, I'm thinking she probably did do it because, seven, like you said, 7,000 by the time you've walked around a bit and you're getting ready for bed and stuff, it soon adds up. I think that's the thing I've noticed sometimes with non-negotiable steps. It's people will choose their non-negotiable, but I don't know if they are saying it's non-negotiable really in their head. We always talk about it being at a level where you should be, that's should be something you are aiming for, so that if you are, you know, trying really hard and you're only getting to 6,000, that's probably your
that's about
non-negotiable.
non-negotiable. Yeah, exactly. It needs to be something that you can do even on your
Yeah.
hard days, right? Like, I actually don't really remember the last time I only got 8,000 steps. It might have been a day that I was like on a train all day, and then I made an effort to, I don't know, like go for a little walk in the evening just to hit that like minimum threshold. But it, or do you know what? It wouldn't even be a train. It'd be like international travel or something, you know, like where it is genuinely really, really hard to do. But apart from that, like I will always consistently be closer to my optimal. But the point in the non-negotiable is you shouldn't really be that close to it much of the time, unless there's the days that, you know, it is significantly harder, or you're ill, in which case throw it out the window. You know, like don't be an idiot. Be like, oh, I've been spewing up all day, but I'm just gonna try and like walk around to get my steps. Like that's stupid, right? But when it's like, okay, you've been traveling, but can you go out for a walk and at least get that minimum threshold for yourself? Yes, you probably can.
Easier now with the lighter evenings as well. I've just started going out for a walk in the evening, which, or just after finishing work and before dinner, you know, just it is getting easier.
Little things like that just change your routine. Like I've started changing my routine. I started this in London because there was a co-work where I was staying, and normally I wouldn't work in the evening. Now that I'm saying this out loud, I'm like, that's a good thing. Anyway, normally like anything after like 5 p.m. just nothing good happens in my brain, right? But I was writing this course for AFM, and I was doing like a work block at like 5 till 7, and then I'd switch off, and I was so productive. I think it's because I went for a little walk, I sat down, I had a bit of a routine, I knew when I was ending, you know, like I had like all this structure in place. I don't know why I cannot work at home in the evening. That's what I realized.
Yeah.
So if I go out of the house to somewhere else, fine. But if I'm just like sitting on my own, no, I just start procrastinating, which is weird because during the day I can do it, or in the morning, like, fine. I like working at home in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I work at home all the time, but there's some days where it's harder, and then the change of routine is good, you know, especially at the moment when the kids are at home on holiday. It's still school holidays. So
Bloody
they're
always school holidays, isn't it?
So I know, right? They're off for ages and then they'll be off again. But it's fine. I'll make them go for a walk with me. Do you want another question? We've got another one from this one's written. Well, it's probably not written by Maureen, but it's from one of Maureen's check-ins. It would be great to hear how others manage holidays away whilst making so many lifestyle changes, specifically choosing not to drink alcohol and the impact this may have on family and friends, a habit slash tradition even that you are choosing to not take part in anymore. Yeah. I,
Think
yeah.
people overthink this, and I think don't make it about your family and friends. Like they can do whatever they want. Like you could not drink and not make a big deal out of it. And then even just think about other situations, right? If you were pregnant, you said, or if you were like, oh, I'm on antibiotics, I can't drink, or you know, you can't obviously lie about pregnancy. Sorry, everyone, I'm pregnant, I'm not drinking. 9 months later. What?
Okay.
Well, that, yeah, well. But you could say, I mean, if you want to, you could just say, oh, I'm not drinking.
I do think that it goes, you know that thing where I said about workouts, about it's not that I shouldn't or I have to, it's that I'm choosing not, I'm choosing. It's the same with alcohol. You don't need to say, oh, I shouldn't, or I'm or I can't at the moment, because you can, and the choice is yours. So it's I'm choosing not to, I don't need anymore. And it's conviction, isn't it? Saying it with conviction
I guess
that.
what is hard is when you say, I've decided not to drink alcohol, then other people, and I guess this is where the impact comes in, right? And it's not your problem, it's theirs, but other people then think about their own alcohol habits, which might not necessarily be a bad thing for a lot of people, right? But it, and it's the same with when you're like, oh, I've decided not to have a dessert, you know, I really enjoyed my main course and I'm full. It makes other people think, oh, well, maybe I won't have one, which I kind of get. Like, it can ruin the vibe for some people. But again, like, these are your choices based on what you want for your life. You're not saying they can't drink or they can't have a pudding or they can't go for seconds or whatever. It's like you have to at some point be like, well, this is what's best for me. And you don't have to overexplain it. Like I said, you can probably just be like, you know, everyone's asking for wine and you're like, oh, no, thanks. I'll just have Diet Coke, sparkling water, orange juice, whatever you want to have. Fine. You'll realize it's
And you
probably
might.
not that much of a big thing. Like, I think because people are so used to me not drinking now, no one even really asks.
No. When I stop drinking, I do still drink. I say I still drink. I don't drink very often. It's very, you know, but I wouldn't say I'm a non-drinker. But I remember when I first started saying, like, no thanks, I'm good. A friend of mine was like, are you worried about getting drunk around people? Like, are you feeling? And I was like, no. I just really like feeling good. So, and that was all it was. And I was like, and I'm not, you know, I feel like you know, people think that you are choosing to give up because there's something wrong. But actually, choosing to not drink, often it's because there's something right. Something feels good. And you're like, I don't want to take that good feeling away.
Yeah,
But
it's strange. Like, I think it was Chris Williams that said this on his podcast once, but about like alcohol is the only drug that we will push on each other and not think it's weird. Like, oh, just have one, just have one. Like, you know, I don't want to. Like, stop pushing that on me. I guess food is the same, actually. You know, people will, but you wouldn't be like, oh, just take these drugs, just try one. You're not. Go on, a little bit of MDMA, come on. Like, you'd be like, that's not okay. Like,
no.
whereas, and alcohol isn't a million miles away from that. I know it's so, in society, it's so normalized. But I mean, if you compare it to, like, you wouldn't push a cigarette on somebody.
I equally don't tell my clients if they want to have a you know drink at the weekends and it's important to them, like fine, but you know how much that is. Like, have an idea. Don't like we've spoken before, don't have a drink because you're stressed. Have a drink because you want to have a drink with a mate and you're having a couple of glasses of wine and you're having a nice time. That's fine. But it's
Oh, like, we're not anti-drinking here. We're anti anything that is negatively impacting your life. And honestly, for a lot of people, alcohol does, especially if they rely on it a lot. And then when they cut it out, they're like, oh, this is so much better. Maybe I don't want to go back to doing that. Or maybe I want to go back to it in a much more moderate way. Yeah. But if you're like, oh, no, I absolutely love a glass of wine on the weekend, I don't have any problems with it. And now and again, I do get drunk and have a great time. Fine, like, no judgment whatsoever. But if
No.
you're someone who's like, it's really negatively impacting me, I feel crap the next day, I make poor food choices, I have really low mood, it's not helping with my anxiety, and well, then okay, let's reduce that or let's take it out.
Agreed. Yeah, and she's asked about holiday anyway, and Emma's got an amazing Substack on Cruise Weeks, haven't you? Which is I
Not
send
about
to clients all the
that. Yeah.
time. Yeah, it's a really good one. So it's I think you say in your Substack about you wouldn't kind of climb the mountain and then just go all the way back down to the bottom, don't you say? Like, because you're on
Yeah.
holiday.
So, like, instead of, you know, being all or nothing, just try and take it as like a week where, hey, you might not be making a lot of progress. You can probably, if you've set your non-negotiables right, you can probably still hit your non-negotiables. And remember, the whole point in that is that you might not be moving forward at the lower end, but you won't be moving backwards. And if you're always, if you zoom out on your progress, you know, we're talking like years, and you're always either, or months to years, depending on what your goals are, you're always either, you know, staying where you are on a cruise week or on like a maintenance week, or you something's come up, or you're moving forward. Like, direction is much more important than speed, because time's gonna pass anyway. And if we can just focus on, hey, you're not going backwards, great. And the analogy that I used is like, how exhausting and demotivating would it be if you knew that you were walking up a mountain and every, you know, I don't know, 200 meters, you go back down 100 meters, then you just start going back up again. Like, that is hell, right? But that is exactly what a lot of people do with their diet. And I, you know, I've been generous there, being like, oh, you 200 meters up and then 100 meters down. People go 200 meters up and then 500 meters back down, you know, because they rebound because they've been over restricting.
That's what I
And
was going to say. It's how you approach that holiday.
yeah.
Often people go to a holiday having starved themselves in the run up to it and then just completely eat way more than they normally would, feel really bloated. So all of that body fat they've lost, they're now bloated anyway. So they're, you know, not feeling so good. But yeah,
So my
yes.
tip around holidays is go in with some intention, pick your indulgences, enjoy them, bring your calories up to around maintenance, set yourself some non-negotiables, right? I'm still going to get the this amount of steps. I'm going to do a little home workout every other day, or even just a 10-minute morning routine every day, something to get you going. And hey, I'm going to pick one meal a day where I like really enjoy it, and I don't, you know, I choose something nice, and then the other meals I'm going to be a bit like more sensible with my choices. Fine. You will come back with no quote unquote damage done. Then what you're going to do when you get back, and this is why I don't stress so much about holidays, because you don't get into a new routine in a holiday, because you're going to come back to a completely new environment again, like your home environment. But what I want you to do for those, especially the first 3 days when you get back, is not weigh yourself, get straight back into a routine when you're on that flight back, or however you're traveling. Make a little note, be like, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. This is what I'm going to have for breakfast. This is when I'm getting my first workout in. You know, check in with us, use us for accountability in the group. Hey, I get back tomorrow. This is my plan for the next 3 days. Hold me accountable. Bam, that's what we're here for, right? But those 3 days when you get back, and holidays are really important. And I say this because recently, I did some research for EIQ, and I was like, what does the research in terms of scientific literature say about people who maintain weight loss? And the biggest thing that trips people up is holidays. And, you know, it's not the holiday, we know that, right? It's not the holiday, it's your response to the holiday. And that's why we're so focused on, like, when you get back from that holiday, those first 3 days, you need to be right back on it. Like, be strict with yourself. And then once you're there, like, okay, cool. Then you can kind of get back into a bit of a routine. Do not weigh yourself for at least a week. Cannot emphasize that enough. Like, if you even want to, but if you do, like, do not weigh yourself when you get back. It has no representation of what's actually gone on in a week. Yeah, maybe. And hey, what's the worst case scenario if you had this amazing family holiday where you enjoyed all this incredible food, and then a week later you've put on 2 pounds? Cool. We know how to lose it. That's what we do here. Like, don't stress about it. Fat loss comes and get, you know, fat is just a store of energy. We can lose it and we can gain it. And, you know, an amazing holiday where you have memories for life is fully worth 2 pounds that we could then just lose again.
Yeah. Top tip as well is booking an online shop when you're still feeling really calm and virtuous on holiday. Book your online shop to arrive when you're home, because it's that period of time where, you know, you've cleared out your fridge or whatever before you go away, and you've only got some stuff in the freezer that, I mean, if you're feeling very good, you could put some prep in the freezer before you go away. That would be a bonus point, sir. But if you've only then got like real ready, like, I don't know, like oven chips and things in the freezer that are fine, but if you're then going to be living off that and getting no protein and so on, just because that's all you've got at home because you've cleared it out, then having a shop arrive is quite useful as well.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, that's wishful thinking, but I think most people just come home and they're like, well, we've had a long day traveling and we've not really eaten that well because we just had something on the plane, and then We'll just order a takeout and we'll start again tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, you're still not ready. And like, that's what I mean by those first 3 days when you get back. You need to be on it.
Yeah, it is. When you've got that, yeah, have things in to make it easier. There
Do you know what?
we
We just recorded an episode with Nicola, which will probably come out, well, it will come out after this in a week or two. And in it, she said something like, I don't know if you remember exactly what she said, but she was like, yeah, I found you on Instagram, Emma, and I just thought, what? This woman just does not take
Relent
shit or something like that.
called you relentless, I think.
Yeah, I was like, oh, and I was thinking, I don't think I come across like that at all. And then I just heard myself there being like, those first 3 days, you need to be on it. There are no excuses. I was like, okay, right. No, I see it now. I can see where she's getting that from.
She was saying it as a compliment as well, I think, but
Yeah, she's saying that's why she signed up. But I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't know that I came across that way. But yeah, no, I can see how that would come across. Yeah.
I found her quote as well, but just, people do go on to listen. It said, the quote that I mentioned, it said, someone told me it was all downhill when you reach 50 and going through menopause. What a load of absolute sh. And that's what she wrote. So I found it after our thing. I wish I'd found it before, but I just like that. So you need to listen to the Nicola episode because,
It
yeah,
was
it's not all downhill.
okay. Do you want to do one more?
Yeah, we can do one more. The next question, actually, that more input was about how to navigate going on holiday, which I would say we've covered. And I love that we're at holiday season now, that we're getting there. Feels so good. Sorry, this might be a bit of a long question as I'm not sure how to word it. I've never been one to particularly enjoy exercise and find short home workouts before or after work are the best way for me to be consistent. I'm wanting to understand more about minimum effective dose for resistance training. I'm not too worried about building a lot of muscle for aesthetic reasons, but do want to be healthy. Is 30 minutes at home with bands and small weights enough to get healthy benefits? And do the health benefits of resistance training come from doing the actual exercise or building the muscle? So if I'm doing three resistance workouts a week, but stop achieving progressive overload due to limited equipment, am I still getting the health benefits of resistance training? It's kind of a couple of parts to that question.
Well, you get the health benefits of resistance training without progressive overloads. Some of them, yes. So the reason I say that is because I was just thinking about there's really cool research by Keith Barr looking into, now I think he was looking at the outcome of strength as opposed to hypertrophy. But there seems to be, and there's some HIIT research on this as well. There seems to be this benefit of really pushing yourself out of your comfort zone or out of like what they would call like your homeostatic range. So with the resistance, with the HIIT training, this particular study I'm thinking about just did 2 10-second sprints. But the real thing that increases the insulin sensitivity response, which is what they were looking at in that study, seemed to be this like maximal effort. Like you are pushing yourself, like from if your homeostatic range is kind of like, you're in a relaxed state, you're pushing yourself, really far out of that. So your body has to adapt in some way to this like novel stress. And I think that's the emphasis. It's like there is some kind of stress on your body, which is a good thing, but then your body's like, wow, we have to adapt to that, right? If you're not really pushing yourself, I don't know if you get that adaptation. Now, will you get, if you're asking, is there any point doing resistance training compared to doing none? Like, come on. Yes. Something is always better than nothing. You don't really need to, I think in so many different ways, a lot of questions we get are essentially that, like, is it worth doing this? I'm like, yes. It's worth doing anything. Like, it is worth just doing a 2 minute workout if you can't do a 5 minute one. Like, it's always worth doing something. But the interesting part about Keith Barr's work was, I think off the top of my head, he did one set to failure on certain machines and he saw strength improvements almost equivalent to doing three sets.
Interesting.
And again, it was kind of showing like if you're doing it to failure, if you're pushing your body, then it will adapt. If you're not doing something that, if you're doing something that doesn't really push your body, then it's not as much of like a stress on the body and it doesn't need to adapt to it. So there's kind of that side of the argument of like, okay, well, there's the progressive overload side of like, oh, are you lifting more training volume? But then there's also on top of that, like, are you stressing your body enough to have to adapt to that? Because remember that like that's what exercise is. It's like, oh, here's this demand on your body that it's not quite capable of meeting, or it's very close to not being capable of meeting. And if you're going to failure, then it's, by definition, not meeting what you're asking it to do. How does it then adapt so that next time it's under that stress, it can adapt, it can perform the way that you want it to perform?
You can make workouts pretty hard with minimal equipment at home as well. I mean, we speak about that, but slowing things down and adding pauses and so on will get you to that point that Emma's talking about, where you feel like you can't do any more. Like,
Yeah,
I
you
reckon.
might need to increase the rep range. If you're like, okay, well, I don't have very much equipment, okay, but then you'll need to do more reps. And again, the research around this is quite cool, that any rep ranges between like 8 and about 30 work for strength and hypertrophy. When you get over the kind of 30 rep range, you're looking at more endurance adaptations than you are kind of strength and hypertrophy adaptations, but still beneficial, like just because it'd be a slightly different adaptation. Yeah, you can do a lot, but whether it is slowing down the movements, even things like what put you're telling me you can't do 3 sets of push-ups to failure. Like, I mean, that's hard no matter what level you're at.
I could definitely do 3 sets to failure. Also, the health benefit wise, when you're doing strength training at home, assuming you're doing some single leg work, you're going to be working your balance as well. So, like, beneficially or aging wise, that's going to be really good, because we don't want to be falling over. Working on our balance is going to be good as well. So, even if you're doing body weight stuff and it's not hitting the progressive overload, there's still going to be a benefit for other areas of health as well.
Yeah. And when you look at blue zones, so these areas where people seem to live longer and healthier lives and have lower disease risk, most of them aren't resistance training, but what they are doing is staying very active, right? And given the environment that we live in, like my kind of stance on this is like, well, you need to kind of make a bit more effort because you're not going to be as active. Like a lot of these places are like, oh, I think there's a certain town in Italy and it's like on this massive steep hill. And people live, for ages, but it's like they're walking up. And I've walked in some of these towns. In fact, there's one I'm thinking about, which was in Albania. And I remember Amelia and I were walking up this hill to this like really nice castle at the top. And I was like, I'm dead. And I remember seeing like some of the locals, like, like really like probably 90. I mean, they're probably freaking 200, right? But they just looked about 90. But anyway, like these elderly people just like walking up the hill because they can. They've always been doing that. They put, that's quite a lot of strain for someone of that age, but they're very fit and healthy because of it. Now, are they going to the gym? No. But are you walking up a hill with your shopping every single day and doing 10,000 steps and probably living at slight altitude and like, no, right? So do you have to make more effort to then work your muscles in a similar way? And you might have to be more proactive about it because sometimes people make this like almost just like this claim against like, I don't know, going to the gym and stuff is like, well, we, people used to live and never do that. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, one, they didn't live as long. And two, like they also had jobs where they, had a lot of labor. And like now we all just sit on computers. It's not really the same. If if you're a postwoman and you carry a massive bag of mail around and you do 20,000 steps a day and stuff, it's like, yeah, okay, well, you're probably getting a huge amount of health benefits from doing that. Realistically, most of us aren't, and thus you need to make a bit more conscious effort to make sure that you're moving your body, you're working your muscles.
I also think if you're, I said this on a post the other day, but if you're gardening, or postwoman, and you're always carrying your bag on your right side, or you're always digging on your right side, you're gonna build those imbalances. And strength training is really good for evening those out and helping you avoid injury, have a better posture. So because you're correcting yourself, you're trying to move with good form. So there's benefits to doing it in a specific way outside of just being more active, aren't there? She said, "Is 30 minutes enough?" I mean, your workouts when you were doing your short ones, they were like 20 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah. And what I will say about like that, because For context, I think I did about a year of training. I started at about 30 minutes, and then they slowly got like shorter and shorter. And by the end, I was probably just doing like 15-minute workouts. I would say I did end up losing a little bit of muscle. Not like a hugely noticeable amount to most people, but like realistically, I probably did. Now, it worked very well for like a long period of time, but you're not, I think when people hear me say that, sometimes they kind of misinterpret it as that's all you need. Like, is it a huge benefit? Yes. Like, yeah, undoubtedly, like you get such big health benefits from even an hour a week of exercise. But is it as good as doing more? No. Like, realistically, would you get more results if you did a bit more? Yeah. 30 minutes, though, I'm like, yeah, you're probably going to get the biggest bang for your buck from that. Like, if you did 45, you might get a little bit more. If you did 60, I'm like, eh, probably just about saturated the benefit you're going to get. The other point I'll make is that when you cut the amount of time down you have to do a workout, sometimes you're quite surprised in how much of the workout you get done. You know, sometimes I'll go in, I'm like, I've only got 30 minutes, I better like get through this. And then I'm like, oh, I did a quote unquote 45-minute workout in 30 minutes without massively rushing, but just not faffing around as much.
Yeah, guilty of that as well, for sure.
Which is nice sometimes, you know, if you're just like, hey, do you know what? I love on a weekend going in and being like, don't really have a time constraint. I'm going to get my workout done. I don't mind if it takes a little bit longer. I'm not in a rush and whatever. And then sometimes during the week, I do have a short period of time. So, you know, I don't look at my phone. I maybe shorten my rest periods a little bit. And that might mean reducing the weight a little bit because you're not going to have as long to recover between sets, but, you know, still get something done.
And if the barrier to you starting a workout is that it feels too long, too daunting, then I get, as Emma said just now, something's always better than nothing, and doing even 5, 10 minutes is going to be beneficial. So yeah, I quite often start people with really short workouts if they are finding it hard to do, and they make amazing progress just doing a little bit, like three exercises 2 or 3 times, like in a morning routine, but different ones. Brilliant. Yeah, works really well.
I know this is so obvious as well, but one is more than zero.
It is. Well done. Yeah.
Someone tweeted, I know, thank you. I just realized this. Such an amazing, but it's such an obvious thing, you know, like when we're like, oh, something is better than nothing. It's another way of saying that, but sometimes it just clicks with people. Like, I think I'd written a tweet that was similar to that, you know, just do something, even if it's 10 minutes, blah, blah, blah. And oh no, I think I tweeted that the graph of the health benefits of just 1 hour of exercise, one of my favorite graphs. But anyway, I think I tweeted that and someone had replied just being like, one is greater than zero. And I was like, yeah, like it's such an obvious thing, but it's like, yeah, I actually quite like that. Like, and we overlook it so much. Oh, is it enough? You know, in every context, oh, there's no point saving £10 a week. Yeah, there is, because it adds up. Like, it's better than saving nothing. It's so much better than saving nothing. But I can get, like, you know, in different contexts, I'm like, yeah, I can see why someone would be like, well, there's not really any point. It's not very much. It's like, it almost makes it like more point because
Yeah.
it isn't that much. But over time, you can start to add that up. And hey, some weeks you might be able to save 20, and other weeks it might still be 10, but you've kind of got that. I would do this, you know, these principles that we coach you work in all contexts. You might have a non-negotiable of I put £10 into my ISA every single week, you know, and that's, I always do that. But if I've got more, then, you know, some, my optimal might be I want to put in £20 a week, but my non-negotiable is I always put in 10, you know, and it's something like that. And then before you know it, you'll look back over a year and be like, oh, okay, I've got actually some quite substantial savings here, and they're starting to compound and work for me.
And then this is very different from saving and not, you know, quite the same, but Duolingo, I was doing it, and actually I was looking at the week. My son was just literally doing enough to not get rid of his streak freeze, which like, or streak even. And I was like, he's doing 2 minutes a day. Like, so like I looked at it and I was like, he's doing 40 minutes. And then I was like, but I'm doing 15 minutes a day. So sometimes just by upping it a little bit over time, we're going to be huge difference. There's going to be a huge difference between where he is, but it's still where he is, and somebody doing zero is going to be so different. And that's the thing, like, yes, doing more, if you're looking over a year, it's going to compound to more. So if you did your £20 a week every week for a year, you're going to have way more. But yeah, it's still better
Yeah,
than
even like the person who saved nothing, you know.
it, yeah. Maybe I need to start paying £10 a week. I quite like that. That's a good
Yes,
idea.
well,
Here for all the life advice.
would like any financial advice? We've just started a new tax year. Open up that ISA.
I need to do my, go through and
Get
sort out
yourself
everything.
a lifetime ISA. The
I
government
can't. I'm too old. I'm too old. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I think, yeah, lifetime ISA. I think you have to be. I think you have to be something like
Anyone can open a LISA.
under 40. No, you must be between 18 and but under 40 years old.
Are you over 40?
I'm 42 in June.
Guys, Ruth looks about 28.
Honestly know that I was, yeah, 40. I'll be 42 in June. Me and Andy are pretty much exactly the same age because he's a June 82 as
Oh.
well. And I was like, very similar ages. I think he's either like a week younger or a week older than me. But yeah, because I remember that when I started thinking we've got very similar birthdays and he's turned his up same age. But yes,
Well, there you
I
go.
guess I'm too old.
Okay, well, unfortunate for you. In which case, still use your iPhone.
Invest. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank you.
everyone. Bye.